I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. You can visit MTN Business by going to mtnbusiness.co.za, and we thank them for their support of the show. Now, I have two telecommunications industry legends with me in the Tech Central, in the Tech Central studio today. In fact, they're dialing in from Cape Town. Dave Mankies and Rob Lith are with Telviva. Good to see you guys. It's been a very long time. How are you? How are you keeping?
Very good, Duncan. Great to be on your show.
Very well.
Good to see you both. Now, Dave, let me start with you. You've been involved in the local telecoms scene. In fact, you both have for many decades. Dave, I remember interacting with you back in the mid-1990s, late 1990s, when you were heading up UUNET in South Africa. I think in those days you must have worked quite closely with Mark Todes.
Indeed, a lot. It was wonderful times. Okay. Those are the times when you know little, you learn fast.
We had Mark on our show, TCS Legends, not long ago. A great guy, and it was good to hear about some of those days. I'm sure you've seen that show already, Dave. But Dave, just tell me a bit about your background again. You were with UUNET. I think you may have spent some time with MTN, if I'm not mistaken. Take us back through your career history.
Yeah, I did my articles at Price Waterhouse. And then I did a thesis on electronic tools and the supply chain. And then I was looking for an opportunity when the internet came about. It really piqued my interest, and I got stuck into the industry and been in it since. And UUNET, when it started as a South African-owned business and got acquired by UUNET, which is an American company. And then Verizon acquired it. Acquired the WorldCom business, which was a parent company. And then eventually MTN bought that business out from Verizon. So that's kind of how the links went into it.
Okay.
I wasn't involved.
Was that before the WorldCom disaster?
It was after the WorldCom disaster, yeah.
After the WorldCom disaster, okay. Okay, so that was what led to the MTN.
Yeah. Beautiful story, Duncan. I must tell you this. One of our biggest customers was MWeb at the time. We managed the whole network for them. And the WorldCom Chapter 11 got announced. And then Tony Roo drove, and I phoned him. He said, can I come over? He drove over, and we're having a staff meeting. And Tony Roo was the CEO of MWeb at the time. He got up on the table there, and he said to all the staff, and we had a video conference into Joburg. He said, listen, I'm your number one customer. I'll stay with you. I'll support you. You just make sure the services keep running. And it was amazing, you know, just the chutzpah and the personality of Antoni Rui, one of the other original people in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, passed away far too young, unfortunately. But, of course, Antoni went on and discovered Tencent and made that investment on behalf of Naspers. Yeah.
Indeed.
And made billions and billions and billions of rand for the shareholders. Dave, what happened post the acquisition by MTN then? You moved across to MTN, did you?
No, I didn't. I moved to Corby Tech, which is a software services company. And they're more famous for Mark Todes worked there. And so I worked there for a while. And then when this opportunity with Rob and Steve came around, I didn't hesitate.
Okay. Okay. Great. Rob, you've got a similar background. You also worked with Mark Todes for a while. I believe you started your career at Compustat/Corby Tech.
That was correct. Yeah, I think it was beginning of 89. I started off with what was then Compustat, now Corby Tech. And it was Mark Todes, Dan Todes, and most significant for me was Mendel Karpel, who is a mentor for me in getting my career started in the IT industry. And he sent me to Durban to head up the Compustat office in Durban. That's really where the whole internet business started, because Steve Davies was with Compustat in Cape Town and I was in Durban. And he said, hey, I've got this link to Tixer, and let's see what we can do with this internet service. And Steve started off, with a floppy disk at that time and a dialer side, and we sold it as a subscription service for providing the very first internet services. And really it grew from there, because I think the internet side got its own legs and you know, that became a separate business. And ever since then, you know, we've been doing things ISP and data related. That got to the point where when I was also with the UNET and Verizon side, that Steve and myself were looking to the future and saw what could be the next wave from being an ISP to being an ITSP, or an internet telephony service provider. And so we left, I think it was September 93, I think, odd in that. And we took a sabbatical for a while we were formulating plans of what this internet telephony service would be. And then September 2003, we left, took a sabbatical. October 2004, we formed Connection Telecom, now Telviva. From then it's just, grown and expanded into what was initially voice services provided with PBXs that Steve built on the Astros platform, to now a hosted service, moving from not just voice but into all of the other channels of communication. Okay. So kind of rode that internet wave that is now into the whole cloud services and everything around it.
So when did you and Dave first cross paths?
Well, it was right from when I was at UNET. Dave was CEO there, and I think I did some business development for UNET in Africa, Botswana, and Namibia in particular. And we did some ventures up into the rest of Africa, Dave, with Africa Online doing some stuff with. So I knew Dave right from those early days. And so when Steve and I started the Connection Telecom business, we looked for somebody with the business, because Steve was a real techie guy in that. I was a salesman, but we really needed some advice on the path to you know, what makes a business run. You know, the cash flow and the, you know, getting the investors on board that you need in that. And so I knew Dave right from those days in that. And then really when our business started materially, you know, growing, where we had some large customers like Ilarine's come on and a few others in that, then Dave came on board to take the reins and really take the business from there. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a long, long relationship for many years.
Yeah, yeah. So, Dave, you've seen incredible change in the ICT space, particularly in the telecom space over these years. Maybe just take us back to the early days of Connection Telecom when you first joined, and how the telecoms landscape in South Africa has changed in that time and what that's meant for Telviva.
I think that the trigger of deregulating the industry opened the door for voice interconnects for several players in 2004. And for the first couple of years, there was this rush to premise-based solutions to accommodate that and do sub-trunking. And around about 2010, the cloud services, we saw some nice solutions of scale, and then we started that. And it started with voice, but where we stand 14 years later after 2010, it's a third of the business is voice. The rest is all other services. Platform fees, license fees, other services that we offer. That's how fundamentally it shifted. And it's all predicated with, a user would like to have a digital journey if they want it, but move over to human when they need it. And that trend has really overtaken the market. And in the process, there comes a lot of things around integration to systems, which is a different layer of skill. There's a whole issue of understanding the customer journeys and how that maps back to business processes and how that needs to go and be integrated back into the systems. So it had to push on a whole different space of doing different things. And And it's gradual. Not all businesses have adopted yet. So it's happening. And so it's a whole new exciting space for us. It forces us into a whole new space of learning in the business. It's exciting space. Yeah.
Okay. So Rob, take us back to those original days with Steve and the formation of Connection Telecom. What was your mission? What were you trying to do originally, and how has that changed over the years as technology has changed and as the industry has liberalized?
Yeah, I think it was to take customers out of what was a black box of monopoly-driven services and that. So it was unknown to the general subscriber how the cost structure of telecommunications costs was, because there was Telkom, MTN, and Vodacom before Cell C came along, and nobody really knew what interconnect fees were and how a provider would put margin and get to a sale price on that. So the costs were very high of those core costs. And I think what happened, as Dave mentioned, when there was that deregulation, the major operators were obliged to connect to all the other operators. And then it became transparent what those costs were. And we were transparent with our customers on what that was and what we had put on as a margin to sell them a service at, rather than that being unknown to them. And that has always been the premises of how we deal with customers. Overall, our whole ethos was around honesty and transparency with the customers, So we would say, look, an interconnect fee is at one time there 70 cents or whatever. We sell the call to you at this much, And so we wanted to break down that cloak of, lack of transparency. And that's how we've operated since then. I think it was also to take on the David and Goliath, so to be the small VoIP operator that would take on the likes of Telkom and others in that, which I think we successfully did, because I think, Dave, you've got the kind of statistics of the kind of Telkom customers that we took over to offer them a transparent and a visible service to them, starting off with the likes of Ellerines, and then we had the Edcons that came across and others. So, I think that was the kind of foundation of our ethos of our business, because Steve developed all of his products in open source. So through having that belief system of having, your code and that visible so that you can see, that it's doing things correctly from a security perspective and from all others. It was basically and then at that time we also distributed some of the, at that time when a lot of customers were still connected by primary rate ISDN cards or basic rate interface, we distributed the interface cards for others to be able to build their solutions on the Astra's PBX and that, which to me basically, built out a grass fire roots development of alternative telecoms services. I think that's been the foundation of what we built our service on,
In those early days, was it really about saving corporate customers money? I mean, we know how expensive telecommunications was in South Africa at a certain point in time. Prices have come down dramatically over the last 20 years. But when you were first starting out, was it really about finding ways to reduce telecoms costs for corporates?
I think that certainly was, and the business cases that we've always put to customers on taking them on their digital journey from premise to cloud and then from cloud to what they can do with integrations and APIs and all of that. It was fundamentally to show them what the cost savings would be when you don't have to pay for the 30 channels of PRIs at its cost when you're only using 10 of those channels. What it costs to have power and infrastructure and all of the rest for the on-premise equipment. And so we, over time, always demonstrated between 35 to 40% savings on what they were paying on premise-based and infrastructure cost side. So that was certainly what the beginnings were. That has fundamentally shifted now. And also the the features that we could bring for a customer who had a small-sized business, who had a PBX that had limited features. The big enterprise could afford the class 5 switch-type PBXs, but it wasn't available for the small customer. So being able to deliver a platform where we could give them full features at that lower cost was an advantage for us in having all of those features that they couldn't otherwise get. That has fundamentally changed because now all the systems that you look at, they all have the same feature list. So to have a shootout on PBX features is to me, pointless at the moment. It's about what service you can now deliver, and that is becoming one of the biggest differentiators. Security, the service you can deliver, and that honesty and transparency, and not just by lip service, actually delivering. You know, when you've made a mistake, you say to the customer, this is a mistake we made. This is what we're doing to fix it up in that. It's so quite a shift from just cost savings to service and the likes and that. But I think, as David would say, as the CA in the room, is it always comes down to the cost, though, Dave?
Well, I think that there was a time when cost was a major decision. It's not anymore. As an example, one of those retailers Rob mentioned, their spend was something like 110 million rand a year. It came down to about 60 million after we did the whole conversion of all the networks and everything. And it's just a pity they went into business rescue. But both retailers, both had roughly about 1,000 sites. So it's big deployments and big benefits. But those were in just after 2010. And it's also one of the reasons why All Mutual Finance joined us at the time. But it's changed. At the moment, the drivers are very much around the agility and innovation, you know, to have faster times to market and to be able to deploy services more rapidly, and also to meet a customer-in approach whereby your whole communication system is geared towards this, where customers can help themselves, and then only the audio part only plays a part at a later stage. But the other big issues is also for more access to more cutting-edge technologies. You get that more easily over the cloud because we network with many other third parties, whether those are hyperscaler services or whether it's other niche services doing voice sentiment analysis, recording of calls, or even voice digital agents or conversational digital agents. So those are the things that you can then switch on as you need because you've got the right platform, which is open, with open APIs to be able to deliver those kind of things. And then around the disaster recovery and security, it's been a big rush for most businesses. And because we've got some large customers, they put onerous requirements on the security side, but everyone benefits. We benefit and our customers benefit. So it's just as it goes, yeah.
So, Dave, you describe yourselves as a unified communications as a service provider. I think everyone's heard of SaaS or software as a service. Yeah. Everything seems to be as a service these days. But UCR, is it pronounced UCRs or USARs?
UCAS.
UCAS.
UCAS. Okay. Would never have guessed that.
CCAS for the contact center, yeah.
Okay. What is UCAS exactly, Dave? Maybe just give us the sort of 30-second brief version of how this works.
So it unifies all the methods of how you can access the solution from a mobile device, a laptop, fixed line phone, boardroom phone, or video conference in a boardroom. And it also aggregates all the methods of communication, whether that's text-based, WhatsApp, Messenger, Slack, website, as well as your telephone. And then on the contact center side, it adds on to that, the contact center as a service. It adds on the social media part and your email part. So therefore, it's a complete solution. A business can talk into the community which they try to service. So some of those dimensions more relevant for business to consumers, but most of those on the UCAR side relevant for business to business.
Okay, and this is all done through Telviva One. Rob, tell us a bit about Telviva One. How long has this product been around? What can it do?
Yeah, so, you know, we've had the voice switching fabric in place for many years in that. And fortunately, that platform was driven largely by API access to all of its features and functionality. What we did is, with our own internal development, is to build a unified communications umbrella over that voice platform. So when somebody wants to come in by a live chat from the web, it'll come into Telviva One. When they want to make their voice call into the platform, they'll come in via the Telviva One single user interface. So they've got their single pane of work that they are in. And if they want to do a chat within that, the chatting would be in that Telviva One interface. And kind of all of the day-to-day common functions that they do, from being able to do very quick dial by names, so that rather than having to go into your contacts and look up a number and then dial it, we'll have a dial pad that, when as soon as I start typing David or Clara, it'll pop up the dial pad with all of the contacts that the user interacts with. So, and then to enable all of that, it's fundamental that we take that application and integrate it into the customer's contacts and back-end system. So our Telviva One will have an integration into MS365 contacts and calendars, Google Workspaces contacts and calendars, and into, for instance, their own LDAP service or their Active Directory service of their users and that. So it just makes those day-to-day functions optimized and easy for them. And then on the customer interfacing side, what Telviva One will do is integrate into the customer's back-end ecosystem. So if they're using Salesforce or Zoho or whatever their ERP, CRM, I'm not referring just to CRMs anymore in that, because all of the CRMs that you see today are now more like ERP systems. Zoho used to be, a CRM system just for sales, but now they do sheets and they do accounting and they do all sorts. So we integrate also into their ERP CRM systems in that. So when the customer calls in, the person taking that call has a history of the previous interactions in that. So if there had been a WhatsApp business channel coming in, or there had been some other web chat or voice call, the person can see those previous interactions in that one view, rather than having to switch systems to see that the person had previously contacted them. So rather than just the old kind of CTI integration where you'd get the number pop up and who's calling you, you can now see who's calling you and have they recently called in with something they're upset about or something they just want to follow up on and that. So Telviva One is really that one interface into all of those interactions. But it's very, very important for us to also, have a look at what the back-end processes are of the business, the actual business processes behind it that are driven by these interactions. Because I don't think it's just sufficient to have the information of, the caller and what interactions that they've had. But as far as possible to trigger business processes from that. So the person might come in on a WhatsApp business channel and you have a bot interface that starts off the conversation. And like we said earlier, the robotics or the chat when you need it, or a human, when you want to speak to the human. So we focus a lot on, I think one classic example that I can give is recently one of the national and regional bus liners wanted us to optimize the booking of a bus system through them, where they would come in on a web chat or a WhatsApp business chat, and they would ask, what's the next bus schedule? And the agents could have a quick way of getting that to them. But then when they said, well, can I book that ticket? And they said, well, hang on, go to our website booking platform and book it there. It breaks that chain of that customer's journey into getting the thing. So within the WhatsApp business chat, we built an automation to take them and do that booking and return it into that channel that the customer's communicating in. And I think in the first 2 weeks, it lessened the load of the agents doing those interactions by 40%. And they could get onto other kind of interactions, which you know, were more complex and needed more human interactions, and the users could do all of that booking. So, you know, that's what we try to focus on, is optimizing business processes rather than just being able to chat with the person
Getting all these integrations right, though, with all these different third-party service providers must have been a bit of a nightmare. How did you do it?
APIs is the answer, really. You know, the flexibility of APIs.
They all expose APIs. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, like no one CRM integration that you do for a customer, they might have a Salesforce or a Zoho or a Zendesk in there, but none of them are out-of-the-box cookie-cutter installations for them. They've all done their integrations to their particular businesses. Sure. So being able to use APIs into that really makes it flexible for us. David, you were going to say?
Yeah. It needs, obviously, people to do those integrations.
Yes. Yeah. And we have, from what we used to do on focusing on voice and the whole platform for voice, we've now built a whole team of developers in that. Specifically to do all of the UCaaS and CCaaS, the contact centers as sort of solution development. That team is building and growing.
Is Telviva one there? Is it entirely your IP?
Telviva one is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Good. So, Dave, I know that Telviva has been looking at international expansion. I believe you recently signed a contract in Ireland. Tell us a bit about that deal, and are you actively looking to expand Telviva's business into the EU?
We are deployed in AWS in Ireland, and our initial focus is really to service South African businesses or head office in the UK, which is South African operations here, and service the requirements in the UK and South Africa. We can service any of the jurisdictions in Europe. We've got an interconnectory arrangement in place to do that. We just elected not to go big and go home at the moment, because you can burn your money on a retail level. So we've got a partner model in the UK. So we're busy setting up partners. I think we're activating our first customer now in the next month or so, as one of our South African customers got operations on that side. But we've recently deployed, a year ago, we activated Vodacom Lesotho and the whole stack of on our UCaaS site for them. And it's working very well. And so we'll see where that goes. We started gradually bringing in the contact centers of service behind that as well for them. And we just act as a technical partner for them in a white label model. And we've got about 19 white label partners in South Africa. Those vary from telcos, which don't have the specialization we have, and then we just enable them. And they just white label it and take it to market.
Okay.
And then also now taking a service, our UCaaS stack, onto an operator in Australia, just looking exactly like us, also operate the online PBX part, but we do the UCaaS part on top of that. Probably that's going to go live probably in the next 2-3 months.
Yeah, next year. They've built their whole virtualized environment, because the fortunate thing is that we can run all of this stack in the virtualized environment. So, we are delivering a service also out of AWS. Other than Ireland, we've got one in Ohio in the States, and we service a provider in Montreal, actually, from there. And now we've got a customer in Melbourne, Australia, and they use the same voice switching platform as us, and they just want to overlay our UCaaS umbrella on top of that, which is very easy for us to do, again, with the APIs into their platform. During November, they should be going live. So, yeah, as the opportunities come up, we'll look at the international countries that we can go into. Some more regulated, some less. So, you know, often you have to find a partner in country who has all of those licensing and facilities in place. Some countries want more jurisdiction of their data to remain just in that country. Others, more flexible now.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you see the Telviva growing over the next 5 years, Dave? Do you see a much bigger contribution from international going forward, or do you, will you remain primarily a South African-focused business, do you think?
We will remain South African-focused, and we set up a separate legal entity to service the international market. And we'll staff that up as it grows and service what we can yield on that. We're positive about that. I think that we were bold, probably over-courageous. We went and took a stand at the Mobile World Congress 3 years ago and pitched our services against all the other global players. And we had a lot of interest, but the target market of telcos was optimistic because their sales cycles are like 2 years, 3 years. And to unseat another solution, you need to offer substantively more benefits. That's why we changed our model to rather look for integrators to focus on.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And Rob, I believe that with the Telviva One solution, that Telviva has the, excuse me if I phrase this incorrectly, but the largest free call community of on-network users in South Africa. What does that mean exactly, first of all?
Yeah, so users who are in our cloud system, compared our cloud platform compared to other providers who have similar systems, we have the largest share of the users on that platform. I think we are currently touching 90,000 endpoint users that are on that platform. And so any customer on the platform is zero-rated calls between that on-net community. So, you know, from the beginning, a lot of providers, particularly Telkom, would charge even inter-branch calls. So one branch in Cape Town calls their branch in Johannesburg, they would pay for that call. I think to some degree that has been made an on-net call for inter-branches. But what we did from the very outset was say that any customer that is on our platform, calls between them are zero-rated. And, you know, that has had a lot of benefits for customers when their service providers are on the same platform and when they're calling to interact there, it's not costing them anything there. So I think we did some statistics at some point where, you know, if there's a I think one of the examples is the large customer being Edcon. When they have all of their point of sale service providers who are calling, you know, regularly on a daily basis to, you know, check for, you know, the system's usage and that, they could make those calls on net. And it saved them, I think, David, with between 15 and 20% of what their calls were being made.
That was substantive. It's over 7-8 million rand a year.
Wow.
And the same for a company like Arenes, which is also a business rescue, and they four of their suppliers was also on the system, so all those calls are free. So therefore, you can actually manage costs out of the income statement that way. It doesn't cost us to deliver it because the costs are covered. So we just pass it through.
Okay. Just lastly, then, I'd like to ask you both, and maybe I'll start with you, Rob, just for your views on the space in which you operate and some of the tech trends that are coming down the line. We've obviously seen a lot of excitement in the last year or two about generative AI. How does that affect you guys? And what are some of the other trends you're seeing?
The generative AI is certainly probably one of the leading trends at the moment because it's basically brought together a lot of what has been done in the past. You know, there has been machine learning, transcription of voice to text that has been done for quite some time. But we haven't been at the point where the generative side can take the output of that information and translate it into the kind of human consumable output and also understand the questions on the input side. So that is one area where in the unified communications world, if you've had that meeting and you need it to be transcribed, with the generative side, it can now not only be transcribed, but it can be transformed into output actions of that meeting, key points that you might have missed in that. So it's really transforming that side of various components that have been done quite well. You know, call centers have for many years have had QAing of calls into their business so that they can evaluate agents' performance. But a lot of that has been had to be done manually. So now all of those QAs, I think, can be done by the artificial intelligence side. You know, it can do the sentiment analysis in that. It can have a look at the conversation and make deductions out of that of what the customer's sentiment is, as an example. So that is one of the kind of key leading things. That's probably where some of the exciting areas are going forward.
I think that there's a fast adoption of the large language models, and it's not about the tool itself. It's what the tool could do for the business. And generally the expectation is if you do a reasonable amount of automation, because it's about the automation process, then you need to do it intelligently. And the large language model enables you to do that and create and improve and make it really useful. And there's some really mature products out there, and not using them would not be smart in the long fullness of time, because if your competitor does, they're going to have a lower cost of production. And so it's no doubt, and it accelerates our business in a big way, because you know we're just the glue putting those things together. And because you have to cover all the channels.
Does it make it more complicated for you? I mean, do you need more developers to do all of this stuff?
I won't believe we spend probably 20% of all of our time collectively to learn, just learn the new things, teach, training programs, formal, informal. It's just changed the way and how we have to do this business. And we have to give the younger generation more input and power in the process. And so it's just good. It's wonderful. We've got the 30s, 40-year-olds, whatever in the business, yeah.
But even our developers have their tasks optimized in that. So, you know, they will always check their code, and they can see whether their code, you know, that is correct if it's been done by an automatic, you know, an AI-generated code. But, you know, what could take them 5-6 hours, they can sometimes get done in an hour now by giving something like GitHub, which they use for all of their code development in that. It can give them, you know, code output, which they can then vet and implement. But to do that initial framework of what their code needs to be could take them 3 hours of coding. They can have that output in minutes and review it for an hour or so and then put it in, you know. So a lot is being optimized with inside the business and that. And then what we are doing there is providing the tools for the customers to automate their business processes from the incoming interactions. But you know, I think throughout all of the applications that we're using day to day, I think there will be a natural osmosis of AI into those tools which we are using. You know, so if it's in the Google workspace where you've got Gemini, that'll be your co-pilot and help you write some stuff in that, whether it be Microsoft's in the co-pilot side in that. All of these tools, I think, are going to overall give an optimization in that. And, you know, the other biggest trend at the moment in that is the cybersecurity and the risks there and addressing that, which is what we focus very, very heavily on. You know, so when we are looking at doing the AI integrations and that, we have a look with partners as to exactly what their compliance with a company's governance is around that. You know, so for instance, it would be very important for a company who's using those generative models and that to know that, for instance, they can have a what is commonly called the RAG model or the retrieval or augmented retrieval. So, you know, having a look at your own private databases that have the factual information in that, because we've all heard about how the kind of general public AI can hallucinate, for an example. But if you're doing the development, you know, properly for a company's own information to be delivered as answers or providing correct information, you'd have that RAG or that retrieval augmented generation. So I think other than AI and all that it's doing there, a very big focus at the moment is security.
Interesting. Okay. You've made a couple of acquisitions, Dave, as Talviva over the years. Fat Budgie, I think they were called. Interesting name. Yeah, And another company called A&D Communications. Just given some of the trends that you and Rob have just been chatting about now, do you see the opportunity to maybe make some bolt-on acquisitions to help you expand in these areas?
I do, but it probably won't be the like-for-like kind of businesses. Rather, businesses will augment our services. You know, with Microsoft, you know, we have a play. There's over 1.1 million Microsoft Teams users, but only 50,000 use the phone license. So we can offer a hybrid model for those. So it's a new big growth area for us. And then I think that, you know, in particular all these ancillary services that we've just been talking about in that space, you know, I can see some of those becoming core to our business. At the moment, we're just leveraging. We, you know, we do the professional services, the integrations part and all of those. But in time, that will be integral to what we do. But then at least we have the benefit of knowledge, experience, and get them in the right place.
Great. Well, it sounds like you both have a very busy few years ahead. Lots coming down the pike, as the Americans would say. Yeah. And very good to see you both again after so long. Rob Lith is Chief Commercial Officer at Telviva, and Dave Mankies is Chief Executive Officer at Telviva. Thank you both for your time today and for sharing these insights. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Duncan. Keep on. Yeah.